then don't you know it, you get a little hook, you get a sinker, you get a line, you get a fish. It's all nothing but fun. And it's just fun and games around Charlotte Harbor right now, as long as that river stays up. And we've been kind of monitoring the Peace River, which is our protection against red tide, keeps the red tide and everything out of the harbor. And it's been dropping about 6 inches a day for the last few days. So the Peace River is down to about 6 foot, 6 foot six, somewhere in between 6 and 6 foot six. And good news is that as long as we've got 4 feet of water in the Peace River, we won't have, that's in Arcadia, we won't have any red tide in Charlotte Harbor. We're doing 1,510 cubic feet per second. And as long as we hold around 1,000, we stay pretty good. Once we get under 1,000 cubic feet a second coming down the river, that's when the red tide can actually make its way into Charlotte Harbor. But for right now, we're protected. A little more rain, please. Okay. Robert, the blind tarpon is in the chair across from me. We got Captain Morris Campbell. We got Captain Cale Wills here. We got RJ in the control booth. There's just so many things going on, I can tell you that. Let's start with a little redfish talk, because for an area that doesn't have any redfish, we sure have a lot of them.
That's a figment of everybody's imagination.
Well, you know, this might be something for the group, the panel. What was it, Robert? 4 or 5 years ago, we noticed it, where starting around November, the redfish just disappear.
Yeah.
And the only thing we could think of was a hole in the space-time continuum, where these fish have swam through some type of opening, go into another realm and dimension, and then start coming back around, August.
Right.
But for the beginning half of the year, there's really little to no redfish being caught. And this has been going on for years. But over the last few years, every fall, we get inundated with redfish. They're just everywhere.
Yeah, especially the bigger breeder-sized redfish.
But, I mean, from 20-inch redfish to 35-inch redfish, they're all over the place every fall. Right. From the little ones to the big ones, all the redfish you could ever want. And it's been going on for the last few years. Now, a question was posed to me by the biologist. Do you think this is increasing pressure? And I said, I think that's the wrong word. I said, I think it's continuing pressure. You know, because let's face it, when it's really hot and nasty out, people aren't going out in their boats.
Right.
I mean, no matter if it's snowbirds or locals or whoever, nobody wants to go out and get cooked. So the boat traffic really slows down as the weather gets hotter. And the fish seem to come out from wherever it is they're hiding, because the small ones don't go out and travel anywhere. They may just have found some creeks or backwaters or something to go hide in. Morris, your opinion?
I've always done really well in August, September, and October. Especially in August, it's hotter than crap out there. You know, water's almost 90 degrees, but we've caught 60, 70 redfish a trip on charters in that time of the year. So, yeah, I believe it. But I also believe that, the constant pressure on them has made them disappear. Because in the cooler months, everybody's out there looking for them. You got tournaments every weekend, not saying anything contrary to tournaments. But, the more you pursue a fish, the more that fish tends to move out of the areas you pursue it in.
Cale, any thoughts?
I think it's
ones
a lot.
That you could say.
Yeah, I have to think that through first. It's kind of like the residents of Charlotte County. Charlotte County is growing and everybody's complaining about the growth. The fish aren't any different. When they start getting that pressure, the growth, they start moving around. They start going other places. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of places in this harbor that are inaccessible to 98% of your boats out there. They got a lot of places that they can go to be safe. They'll change their habits, and as fishermen, we are creatures of habit. We don't like that change. We go back to that same spot we caught redfish a month ago and then complain and wonder why they're not there.
I always draw back when I hear that phrase, because Robert and I were in the store one day, and a guy came in, commercial fisherman, and he caught, 90 sharks up the river that
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And then he said he went back a few days later and he caught like 40 or 60 sharks, and then went back a few days later and only caught like 15, or then went back again and only caught like 2, and he was then complaining how this area had just gone to hell, that this was just no good because, my God, there's just no fish here and there's too many people. Now, Robert, what's your thought on what these guys said?
I think we definitely changed a lot of these fishes' habits. I mean, a prime example is look what we've done to snook over the last basically 20 years on the flats with going out and chumming them. We've changed the fish and how they act. You know, it was never normal for snook to sit on an open sandbar close to the bushes and hang out there all day long in April and May when guys are going out there chumming by the hundreds whitebait onto the flats. You know, whitebait doesn't go all the way up into the mangrove systems, up into some of those little tiny creeks, but these guys have changed the habits on how those fish act and stay, and that's why when we had that freeze several years ago, it killed so many snook because they've gotten lazy. They knew where to sit and wait for food to be hand-delivered to them, and I think the same thing goes with the redfish. You get that much pressure, they're going to relocate and try to find other areas out of the way. You know, it's like deer hunting. You know, you'll see deer all the time up until open season comes along. All these people inundate the woods, change the scents, change all the noises, everything else. Those deer will hunker up and sit there in their bedding areas or move to an entirely different area to get away from that kind of pressure.
Well, if you walked into Walmart, and every time you walked into Walmart, the greeter punched you in the face, how long would it take you to quit going to Walmart?
Well, I'm not sure that's the
three or four trips for me.
I mean, some of us may be slow learners, but I'm sorry. Publix is starting to look better and better.
Really sorry.
Yeah, exactly right.
Okay. The opinions on this show may have nothing to do with the opinions of anyone anywhere at any time. All right. We've been out there and just seen a lot of different stuff, but where are the redfish right now, Robert?
Well, honestly, they're...
They're not at Walmart.
No, they get punched in the face. Why would they go?
They're on the upper end of the harbor, basically, around Whore Point, Mangrove Point, all the way down the east side, the west wall. I'm hearing good reports in Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, and in Widden Creek area, Catfish Creek, throughout that whole area. And it's a lot of singles, doubles, and even triples up under the bushes and out along the flats and sand holes. But there are some scattered schools out there. There was a school that's off of Whore Point last week, which is always there this time of year, but it's been really hard to find them. But when you get on them, there's 50 to 100 fish on it. There's been a big school down there just south of Burnt Store on the Bar, which you can't miss that because there's always 27 lunatics trying to catch them. You know, there's been some good redfish going on just about anywhere you go to in the middle to lower end of the harbor, essentially along the flats and bushes. Crabs are definitely primary food source for them right now, along with bigger shrimp. Cut mullet is working exceptionally well as far as natural baits goes, but artificial-wise, a small gold weedless spoon is outperforming every other bait.
Quarter-ounce to eighth-ounce spoon, by the way, boys and girls. When we're talking small, we're talking tiny. Nope. Not the half-ounce, not the three-quarter-ounce. You got to get those little ones. And if you get a hammered gold one, that's actually gold. That's awesome to get. Now, topwater lures, the only time I really want to do topwaters on redfish is if I have a second person on the boat. Now, one of us throws the topwater, tries to get the guys, the redfish, interested in boiling up on it, and then the second person throws a soft plastic or a hard bait or something on them to actually get the hook up. But the hard part about it is getting the guy with the regular lure not to cast too much, because when the fish boils up, he's really got to cast right on that boil. And if that guy can cast on the boil, it's pretty much instantaneous hookups. They get so excited about the topwater lure, but they just can't quite get their big butts up out of the water enough to get it. So that makes for some phenomenal fishing, but it's really partner fishing. One guy's doing the topwaters, one guy's throwing the lure that would get it. Right now, I would say the Skitter V from Rapala would be my first choice. Number one, take the back treble off, put about a 2-aught or a 3-aught BMC single on the back, give you a little better hookup chance. But, Kiel, what would be your lure choice for when somebody's working on topwater to be able to cast on them and hook up a redfish?
I would say it would depend on how good of a caster, like you said,
is. You, in particular. So we're talking somebody who can't hit the broadside of a bunker.
I'm going to go with a Blake jig.
Oh, with a salt and pepper chartreuse, salt and pepper shad body with a chartreuse tail.
And a chartreuse jig head.
And so you think that little paddle tail would be the way to hit them?
Absolutely. Okay. And I like the color of that Blake jig, and it seems the fish do too.
All right. Morris, what would be your, you've got somebody throwing top orders for you. You've got to get something subsurface to nail the redfish. Which is your choice?
An artificial, I would probably select that jig. The only difference is this time of year, especially with the darker water, I would probably choose something with a white paddle tail on it.
So you're going to a paddle tail?
I would use a paddle tail. Or twister tail even, but twister tails get bit off easy. I would rather use paddle tail with either a white or a red.
All white
head.
Or red.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Robert, your choice.
I'm going to throw a topwater lure.
Somebody throwing a topwater lure.
Let me finish. Okay. I'm going to throw a topwater lure. With a customization like you had taught me probably 20 years ago,
tying
a teaser on the back of it about 16 inches off the back.
Man. You're going to put your little tiny Clark spoon off the back of it.
Yep. Clark spoon or a tiny soft plastic like either a paddle tail or a curl tail.
So
the spoon's going to be my preferred choice right behind that topwater.
Okay. Now I get it. What Robert's going to do is take a piece of leader material, once he has his topwater lure tied on, and go off the back eye, and about 2.5 feet back, Clark spoons, they're a little stamped piece of metal. They're too light to throw on their own. You just can't get them out there. But they're perfect as trailers behind lures because it doesn't take much to keep them up in the water. They'll dance around behind that topwater and make that redfish nuts. They do come in silver and gold. You're looking for an aught or a double aught size, which is the zero or the double zero. But I prefer the Jethro Bodine aught and double aught. All right, RJ, you're up next. What's the lure that you're going to put while somebody's throwing a topwater?
I've always had my best luck with small gold spoons, as we've been talking. I love the Johnson Silver Minnow. In gold, and you can put a little teaser on it, and that seems to work best for me. I've always been successful using that combination.
All right, well, there we have a redfish thing.
And now I'll throw something else in. This is also the time for saltwater fly fishing, because you don't have to move anything quickly. You don't want to move it quickly at this time of year. And so you can tie something on with a little silver or gold tassel on it, and that usually is pretty successful also.
Now, I would go with a fly if I had somebody throwing a topwater finding fish for me. But to go out fly fishing right now, that's a lot of work. You're going to throw your arm off. It's like musky fishing. You're talking about the fish of 1,000 casts because you spend so much time in the air with the fly rod. You just don't spend enough time in the water. It just takes too long to find the fish. So I would go out and find some redfish and then take out the fly rod.
Well, exactly. And I agree with you. You don't want to spend the day back casting.
I just can't see down a fly
gotta
rod.
Know, you got to know where they are and then toss to them. But that's usually pretty successful.
I'll go as mine because I'll take that one and say, I would definitely do a fly if I had somebody throwing a topwater for me. Because I could see the boil, get a quick little back cast, shoot it over there, and probably be pretty good with it. So, that's good. All right. diatom algae. This is a new one that's popped up on the radar here just in the last couple months. Out at Gaspereau Island in Boca Grande area, all of a sudden the water turned dark, dark black. We literally thought at first it was oil from the oil spill, because the Deepwater Horizon oil spill back in 2010, Obama sunk all that oil, sprayed the most toxic substance on the planet on that oil, and had been spraying it and spraying it, couldn't get anything to stick. And the object behind this stuff was to congeal with the oil and make it had heavy metals in it to make it the oil sink below the surface. And they sprayed it for several months, but it was just too hot. I know I was there. I saw this. I was there. I was there 3.5 months. So this is personal observation. And it wouldn't stick. And so what was funny is the oil wasn't killing any fish. The oil was floating on the top. Fish weren't dying. It was really no big deal. But tropical storm, I think it was Bonnie, came through, and it cooled everything down. The day before Bonnie came up, it was 105 degree heat index at 5 a.m. while I was waiting in line to, you know, put my boat in and go out for the day doing the oil stuff. It was just too hot. The oil wouldn't, that stuff wouldn't stick to it, just go right through it. And when Tropical Storm Bonnie came, it cooled it down into the 70s. The oil got hard. They sprayed it on it, sunk it, and got it out of sight. Well, that mat of oil is gone across the bottom, following the loop current, and went around by the past the Big Bend now, and it's been working its way south. And we've had a couple people out there fishing who brought up sinkers that had oil on them. So we know that that Deepwater Horizon spill has been affecting our area out there in small patches. It kind of just drifts along the bottom, really nasty. But we thought it might have been the oil spill. But what we find out, Robert, can you tell us a little bit about this? It was, now, Morris, you saw this out there.
Yeah, and it looked like oil, but it didn't have the same characteristics that an oil spill would have to it. It was different. You could tell it wasn't oil, but it sure looked like it. It was black and thick and gooey.
And Robert, what is this and what does it do?
I forget the exact Latin name of it, or the common name that they call it, which is its Latin name, but it is a diatom algae, which is a larger of the algaes. It consumes a lot of food and grows at an alarming rate, and its byproduct is turning the water black, basically. But the coolest part about it is that it's absorbing so many nutrients so quickly, it's killing off the red tide. Because it's so totally competing against them.
This black diatom and the red tide algaes compete for the same food source.
Yes.
So as that black diatom algae goes in, it can literally eat everything the red tide wants and kill the red tide.
Yeah, it grows at a lot faster rate than red tide does, so it just way outperforms it.
Okay, so here we've got a fast-growing thing that will actually kill red tide. Now, the reason nobody wants it to is because it creates a thing called hypoxia.
Yeah, that's a byproduct of it, unfortunately. It grows at such an alarming rate that it's actually sucking the oxygen out of the water column from all depths, from the very bottom all the way to the top, to the point where there's no oxygen left in the water.
So it's actually worse than red tide.
Yep.
Even though, okay, everybody thinks red tide is this horrific thing. The red tide is not as indiscriminate of a killer as the black diatom, because that black diatom sucks the water, the oxygen out of the water from the bottom right to the surface, creates zero oxygen, and everything dies. Where with the red tide, a lot of things don't die from red tide. Crabs, clams, oysters, shrimp. They live through it, and most often the red tide is floating near the surface. Yes. And it's not affecting the fish down 5, 10, 15 feet in most common circumstances. Sometimes it can go down to 30 feet, but most commonly it doesn't. So this is actually worse than the red tide.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's causing a lot of crab kills and a lot of things that you normally wouldn't see dead in a red tide situation. I had several reports this week out on Little Gaspereau Island of people that were actually watching crabs and mantis shrimp and everything coming out of the water. You know, crabs can bubble and survive if they can get to the oxygen in the air, and they'll bubble and actually they could live. And they had their entire dock front area along Placida Harbor. They had crabs and mantis shrimp and all manners of crustaceans that you wouldn't normally see doing it completely out of the water. The mantis shrimp were jumping out of the water, jumping up on the land.
Now, and I witnessed that too out there a week ago this past Sunday. Took a ride out there and saw that. And at first it was weird because you were hearing about the swimming crabs, which is like your blue crab, your pass crab. Those are two primary ones that are around that. They actually have a swimming fin that can swim up on the surface to get higher up where there is a little bit more oxygen. But when we went out there, we were seeing calico crabs, which also are called shamefaced crabs. They're white with the brown polka dots on them. And then we also saw a handful of stone crabs. And a lot of those calico crabs were actually on the rocks right there by South Beach Restaurant, hanging just underneath the surface. But down along the beach, they were right at the edge of the waterline. You know, and they were just trying to stay moist enough and cool enough, but still being able to breathe outside of the water because there was no oxygen at all.
So while social media and the nightly news are raving about this and raving about that, you actually get to hear the real news here. You know, we're not making up stuff. We're not telling you that, you know, how bad and how horrible and how good and how great. It's the real deal. So we actually have a new thing on. Now, loss of oxygen is nothing new in Charlotte Harbor. We've been dealing with this every summer that I can remember. If it gets calm and still at the change of a tide, it's quite common to see shrimp just all of a sudden come right to the surface back on the flats and try to get air because all the water below them has no oxygen in it. Right. Now, this can last for a couple of minutes up to a couple of hours. And it can happen in very small patches or over a large area. So oxygen loss and oxygen deprivation, hypoxia, is a very common thing. Now, if you ever notice when people spray the weeds in a lake, this has become very common. Let's just go out and spray these weeds. It's not toxic. It doesn't do anything. But it makes the plants that they spray die so quickly that the decaying process sucks all the oxygen out of the water, and all the fish in that area are dead. And it happens on all the canals, all the lakes where they spray the weeds. You're killing all the fish and all their food from a lack of oxygen. It's the same thing as red tide does. It's the same thing as this black diatom algae does. These and that herbicide they spray in the water to take the plants out kills in the exact same manner. Now, if you fed it to the fish, I guess it doesn't hurt them. But if it takes all the oxygen out of the water as a byproduct, it's like watching those commercials on TV. Take this if you have a problem going to the bathroom, but you might have, you know, blood coming out of your ears and, you know, you're probably going to get cancer and death may be a byproduct. But take this because it's good. It'll fix that. It causes 18 other things for the one thing it fixes.
Which are worse than what you're trying to cure.
Another way to describe hypoxia is anyone, and most people have at some point or another, had a fish tank, whether it was a goldfish bowl or an actual aquarium. When you set up that aquarium, you have to set it up for sometimes a couple of weeks and let it cycle itself. Mm-hmm. And if you watch that tank, you'll actually see where it's gin clear, and then all of a sudden you walk by it 5 minutes later, and it looks like somebody poured milk in it. It's all cloudy. And then 5 minutes later, it's clear again. Or 2 hours later, it's clear again. And it'll do that a couple few times. And that's it cycling itself, building up different bacteria. But it's the same concept of this hypoxia that happens. It can last for 2 minutes, 2 hours, or even 2 days, depending on how strong it is in that particular area. And fish cannot hold their breath for that long.
I have very few things to hold their breath more than 5 minutes.
Yes, people, fish can drown.
Yeah. All right. Now, getting on a more fun note, tarpon.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I've told you guys about El Diablo, the one we caught. Hopefully one of you guys hooks him, and he just destroys your arms, shoulders, and back the way they did to poor Schmidt and Mike's, you know, these guys. Tarpon are out in the harbor real good. I'm hearing stories about along the beaches. What do you got, Robert?
All the 20-foot holes, The intercoastal, basically from Placida down into Pine Island Sound, has been really good this week. And then some fish out on the beaches, Boca Grande Pass and Captiva Pass in particular. You know, guys are catching them. Look for ladyfish. Look for some bird activity because they seem to be really concentrating around those schools of ladyfish. But a lot of guys are catching them just by blind trolling or very, very slow trolling through the center holes and even outside of the bars on the east and west wall with either a bait buster, or they're also trolling the hoagies or the Z-Man giant flukes-looking things that are 12 inches long.
Now, Morris, what's your thought? How you've gone out after these tarpon many times. What's your ideas? How would you go about after these fish? Now, you got your choice between the beaches or the harbor.
Well, under normal circumstances, this time of year, either one is good. You know, you can be almost 100% successful up the harbor or on the beach, given the situations. Now, with the changing red tide, I would focus on the harbor. And something that I learned ages ago, and you guys were just talking about it, and it's very effective for tarpon, is, you know, it's old school, but a couple of big reflecto spoons behind the boat, one shorter.
Oh, I'm on with that. One I longer, love a reflecto spoon.
And it hooks the tarpon well, and you don't have any heavy weights for him to throw it out. Something that I came to try from my experience live baiting offshore for fish is I would take that particular ladyfish that we were just talking about, and I would keep those ladyfish alive, and I would slow troll the live ladyfish for those tarpon, just bump troll those. And yeah, you'll catch a shark every now and then, you'll get clipped off, but the tarpon really get on those live ladyfish.
Now, last week, we were talking that Captain Carla and me, we had found out that even the sharks weren't eating the dead ladyfish. You got to catch them on the jigs. We're using the VMC hot skirt jigs because they were easy to get the fish into the boat, easy to get them off, and they lived in the live well hooked with those. That VMC hot skirt, I mean, we could catch them on all these other things, but that one was the best for bringing them up to the boat, getting them to flop off, and getting them in the live well, because Carl actually had a theory that these fish were not eating dead fish because of the red tide dead fish.
Good possibility.
So they were just avoiding dead fish at all. They had to be live, and that was shark and tarpon. I've never had sharks not eat dead bait. The only one the fish would go after was dead sardines, and that was usually while we were reeling them in. And I think the sardine is just small enough where it looked like it was half dead, even though it was all dead. Zombie baits, you know. Yep. Looks like it's dead, or it looks like it's alive, but actually dead. Kale, what's your best advice for catching tarpon right now? You got a choice between the harbor, the rivers, the bridges, the beaches, passes. What do you want?
I want to be in the harbor. This is the time of the year where they usually come up into the harbor to put on a big, heavy feed anyways. One of the main reasons that the ladyfish are working so well is we don't have a lot of thread fins in the harbor. The way it was working in the past, you had great opportunities in the morning with your live ladyfish until those thread fins come up to the surface. Once the thread fins come up to the surface, a tarpon changed their attention to them, and they're just swimming up through that school with their mouth open, where the ladyfish, they're targeting their bait. So you had to go get ladyfish at 9 o'clock in the morning and be on those tarpon by the time those thread fins came up to the surface at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I hate to break it to you, but that's exactly what we were up against. Because the bait fish, there's gazillions of them in the harbor. I mean, I would probably kiss the bottom of your round butt cheeks out in the middle of 41, give you 15 minutes to draw a crowd if there wasn't at least 10 million bait fish in Charlotte Harbor. They're not coming to the surface. We think because of the fresh water, they're hanging on the bottom.
Slim.
And those tarpon are diving down, coming back up with mouthfuls of bait fish, and they won't look at a ladyfish once it gets to be about 2 o'clock.
You're getting a good 4 hours out of that now, so take advantage of that.
You're getting just amazing stuff. RJ, you got a preference on your tarpon? Now, you got all the different places. Anything that you'd like to do?
I'm a surf walker. I love walking the beach and fishing that way. that kind of slows you down on live bait if you're going to be walking the beach. So you got to get creative. And the lure that I've been most successful with is like a jointed mirror lure.
Now, I'm not even sure if we can get those anymore.
Well, and there's...
That might be something in your hidden tackle box. You might have to switch to a Rebel or a Rapala or a Bomber, you know. But
How long is this jointed one
that you're talking about?
About 4 or 5 inches long, 6 inches, somewhere. In, all right. I got a couple of them, and they're mirror lures.
Mirror lure. We're going to be talking to them at Mirror Lure this coming week because we're expanding our mirror lure selection way out. I will see if it's possible if they still make that.
That'd be great because the ones that I have are pretty chewed up at this point. You know?
Yeah, I promise you.
That's why you never see me in the store because I'm too damn cheap.
Well, I will talk to Eric and the owner of Mirror Lure and ask him personally. I've got his cell phone. I would have called personally to see if I can't get those ones. I found in my yard, it got knocked out of one of my tackle boxes, and one about 3 inches long, a jointed mirror lure, and I save it for special occasions. I couldn't believe it. I walked by, there wasn't a grass. I freaked out.
My goodness.
Pick it up, put it back in the tackle box, wiped it all off.
The other lure I've had success with walking the beach is any of the Yuzuri silver-sided lures. I mean, you guys know the names of them. I just grab them off the...
Probably Crystal Minnow.
Yeah, those seem to work really well. The trick I found, though, in the surf is to try to work them slow and work parallel with the shore, not casting out, you know, 90 degrees from the shoreline. That seems to not many fish notice the lure at that point. But if you're running parallel to the beach, you know, get in about thigh high and toss to your left and to your right, and that seems to work much better than trying to toss it out into deeper water.
And if you don't want to walk out in the water, you got to toss it like a 25, 30 degree angle off the shore. 45 isn't, you got to parallel the shore more. So it's a little tricky, but it's absolutely, now that's how I snook fish out there. I go out knee deep and just cast parallel to the shore.
Right, and if you look at the bait fish, that's what you're doing. They're not coming in 90 degrees from the shore, they're running along the shoreline. So now you've got something that's even more looking more natural than if you're pulling it in directly 90 degrees to the shoreline.
I have one more thing about tarpon, too.
All right.
We've all talked about either harbor or the beach, but there's another area.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think it was with you when I saw it.
Well, the one I'm going to talk about now is actually little tiny lagoons, canals, basins, Spring Lake, for instance. Those kind of places.
Now, here, I thought you were talking about 40 miles offshore.
No, I'm not talking about that now, but yeah, I've seen
that's
that.
That's massive herds of
that's massive, but they usually don't bite because they've got love on their mind and not eating.
Yeah.
But my favorite tarpon, and I've caught so many tarpon right now, I don't care to catch another 100-plus pound tarpon. Not me. But that 10 to 20-pound tarpon, oh, my goodness, what a bunch of jumps.
Pulling. I love them up to about 50 pounds. Yeah. I like then it 30, becomes work. 40. 50 is about where I draw the line anymore. Mm-hmm. At 50, okay, I know how to get him to shake the hook. If he'll jump for me, I can get that sucker off right there.
Once you get that first run and that jump or two like that, you've got the best of them. But you can catch these smaller juvenile tarpon, and you can catch them on topwaters, you can catch them on swim baits, all kind of good things in those backwater areas.
What I want to go to now is we're going to do a spot check, and we're going to talk about this spot. And the reason I want to talk about it is because there's so few people out there. This spot usually has a waiting list for boats to get into it. You got to go there by boat. This isn't one you can go by land. This is, you know, and I'm being a little, you know, that's a little unfair. But a place called Gallagher's Cut. It's out in front of Turtle Bay, and I'm not kidding. There'll be 2 to 4 boats anchored up inside of Gallagher's Cut, and then there'll be boats anchored up outside waiting for one of them to leave so they can go take his spot. And it's just all day long a continuous exchange of boats. It's a very pretty spot. It's got all white sands around it, sand dunes, as a matter of fact, and, you know, the islands. It's as picturesque of a spot as you could ever imagine. Cale, what do you think of Gallagher's Cut?
I like Gallagher's cut this time of year. This is probably my favorite time of year to fish Gallagher's cut.
I think
cut.
Right now is the only time you could ever go there and have a reasonable chance of getting in.
You've got a lot of snook coming back from the beaches. They're going to come through Gallagher's cut. You have a lot of large breeder redfish coming up that side of the harbor. They're going to go through Gallagher's cut.
The jacks.
Jacks, Spanish mackerel. Also a pretty good time of year, and nobody really thinks about it. Drag a shrimp or something across the bottom. The flounder will get in there, too.
Yeah.
And I like to use Gallagher's cut as a training aid on my educational trips.
Yeah, I can see that. It's got a little bit of almost everything to do.
Well, I use that for the guys that constantly drive their boat with their head in their GPS, worrying about water depth. Because I'll put the front of their boat up onto the beach and say, okay, what are you reading back here at the back of your boat where your transducer is? Oh, 12 feet. Now you know why you don't drive with your face in your GPS. Your front of your boat hits first.
Yeah, I had a guy, I couldn't believe it. This idiot is sitting there on his sailboat, aground. The boat's not moving. He's arguing with me that he's not aground. The boat's hung up. The prop's hung up on something. And I'm like, bud, you're in 3 feet of water. My GPS says 15 feet. I said, you tell me about your GPS one more time. I will leave you on this bar. I said, if you just shut up, throw me a rope, I'll get you off the sandbar. But if you're going to argue with me, you know, no, I'm leaving. So, Morris, what's your thing about Gallagher's Cut? What do you think?
I'm
bad, or ugly?
It's fine. And the time that I like to go and fish there is when it's cold, when it's windy, and nobody's out on the harbor. And I'll go in there, and we'll catch trout, we'll catch snook, we'll catch redfish in there. And quite a bit of them, you know, but, you know, we're fishing shrimp, usually free line, just as slow as you can fish them, and, you know, you can have a ball there. It's a great spot, but as soon as the weather gets pretty, you know, it's basically the revolving door you just described.
Yeah, it's a parking lot.
One of the other things you catch in there, too, that we didn't say anything about are really nice mangrove snapper in that deep hole.
Yeah, I don't know why I never think of mangrove snapper in that spot, but it's really never not my choice for snappers. I've got some other spots for that, but yeah, you're right. Robert, Gallagher's Cut, good, bad, or ugly?
Well, it's incredible, but this is not something that is in my realm of comfort, but for a lot of people it is. The whole area right out in front of it. On the harbor side, as you go into that little channel, before you get to the channel, you got the island on the right-hand side, then the main island on your left-hand side going towards Bull Bay. That entire sand flat is absolutely amazing for wade fishermen. Very firm sand. It's got a washboard-type bottom. It's close to structure, close to deep water. The snook, pompano, flounder, and redfish that cruise along that whole shoreline and all on that washboard bottom is amazing for the people that want to get out and wade fish. And the water's generally, like right now, it's actually starting to clear up pretty well out there. So you can almost do some sight fishing activity at the same time. So for just a spot inside the spot, it's something a little bit different for somebody to try out, especially if they're a little bit apprehensive about wade fishing but want to learn about it. That's a very safe area to do it at.
All right, let's give this a Robert rating. Would you go into your knees there?
I would.
You would?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we got a Robert 5 fish out of 5. You'd go in past his knees. You have no idea how rare that is, boys and girls. The blind tarpon don't get in the water.
No.
All right, RJ, do you know where Gallagher's Cut is?
No, it's the first I've heard of it.
All right. For those of you, if you guys are wondering where it is, go to fishinfranks.com, FISHINFRANKS. Hit the maps of where to go fishing. It's in the boat-only section. And I've got maps and drawings and arrows and circles and, you know, 24 color glossy pictures with circles and arrows on the back of each one telling you what it is and how it will be used as evidence against you for our buddy Arlo. He's still one of my favorite songs. If you know where Bull Bay and Turtle Bay are, and right almost where they meet in front of Turtle Bay, there's a little cut through there that's called Gallagher's Cut. You have the main opening further to the east or to the right as you're looking at Turtle Bay. But to the left, there's kind of a tall little island, a lot of sand there. It's really pretty. And there's a little cut that goes through there. But because it's so narrow, it gets very deep. So you've got a foot and a half of water down to 12, 15 feet, back up to a foot and a half. So it's very popular because it holds a lot of fish and it's very picturesque. So anyway, that's what we're talking about. Go to fishandfranks.com. There's nothing on there that you can buy. I don't have anything for sale on the website. It's just to tell you about fishing. So you're not being hustled into anything. And I personally have uploaded every misspelled word and every upside down picture and every other thing. Don't complain to me about punctuation. It's free. It's all fishing information. Yes, I don't know how to spell. Use your translating genes. Okay. Offshore, Robert, what's been going on out in the deep water of the Gulf?
Honestly, not a whole lot this week because of how windy it's been, unfortunately. A couple of guys have gone out 15 miles to catch a few snapper and stuff, but overall, the offshore has been pretty quiet. It's supposed to get nicer by this weekend, so if you want me to give you a predictable forecast, I can. But as far as what's gone in this past week, it's just been a little too lumpy for our average anglers right now.
All right, well, we'll put you in the spot. What's your prediction for this week as the wind dies down?
I would personally run out to about 20 miles out and just kind of do some grocery shopping for some mangrove snapper, lane snapper. Some of the porgies have been doing good. Up until this week's wind, I'd still been hearing about quite a few permit out there with some barracuda and some small sharks.
Morris, what do you got to add to that?
Well, I'm going to be fishing out there this coming week, and it's October, guys, and this is the time for your blue water fishing in the Gulf. Everybody likes to go when it's really nice and pretty in July and August and everything, but end of September and October is when we get a migration of billfish down our coastline.
So the billfish are coming out. Now, how far out are you going to have to go to find that migration of billfish?
I have traditionally been very consistent in the same areas where we go to catch red snapper in the 35 to 50-mile range offshore. Everybody goes that far to catch two red snapper, but everybody seems like it's a real pain for them to go out and catch a sailfish or a white marlin in the same spot.
So you're calling for sailfish, white marlin,
blackfin tunas, wahoo,
blackfin
dolphin,
tuna and wahoo,
and dolphin.
Yep. So, what are some? Give me a way to catch some of this.
I'll tell you exactly how we do it. We go out and we fish naked and
this I don't need to know. That's a little too much information.
Okay, naked ballyhoo.
I'm sitting out here thinking, out of all the things coming out of Morris's mouth, he's out there fishing naked is just
that's right.
Not one of the things I needed to know.
The first thing that went through my
God
head
God bless
was,
you.
That's a lot of sunscreen.
Yeah, that's a lot of sunscreen.
Well, you know, you guys have seen me naked, so you know. Okay.
Wait, that was too much information also. So back to the naked ballyhoo.
So so if I could finish the sentence.
Give me a towel.
We fish naked ballyhoos and skirted ballyhoos, and these are in the medium to small size, and we will troll those at around 6 to 6.5 mile an hour, and we troll them on the surface from outriggers. We also fish teasers. We use a dredge, which is basically an enormous umbrella rig that we pull off a teaser reel, and we use squid chains with lures at the back of the squid chains. We will troll these around the structures that we would normally catch the red snappers and grouper off of. And this time of year, you get a lot of current rips from the loop current. And on those current rips, you'll have weeds. And definitely troll any, no matter how small, current rip, weed, any kind of weed line, any floating material, it's there.
Now, how far off of a weed line? Because a lot of people get really messed up. They're going out to troll a weed line, and they literally try trolling on the weed line or right next to it. How close do you really have to be?
I can't be any closer than 50, 60 feet from the weed line because my outrigger's that long. You know, I'll be right up on it then, you know, and I can be 60 feet from it. But right.
But for normal humans who don't have...
Well, you had to bring the sunscreen thing up.
Yeah.
All right, so
for those of us who only need a teaspoon of sunscreen,
stay 20 to 50 yards away from
yards or
yeah,
feet.
Yards,
really?
yards, yeah, because you're going to have a spread of baits out, and
well,
you
now,
can
like my boat. I don't have outriggers.
Okay.
All my stuff lines up behind the boat.
20 yards,
so that's 60 feet.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, that's 90 feet, right? What? No,
60 feet.
60 feet.
60 feet, okay.
Yeah,
60 feet. It ain't math, Frank. It's fishing, Frank.
Well, that's fine. And, you know, but here's the thing. Those fish don't just hide under the weed line and just wait for something to come by. They're prowling the weed line. They're prowling outside the weed line. They're using it as a reference point. So if you get right up against the weed line, you know, more than likely you're going to be disturbing the bait fish and spooking all the bait fish that are under the weed line. And if you go outside the weed line, say 40 to 60 feet, just as a rule of thumb for normal boats, you're going to be presenting your baits normally, naturally, and you're going to catch a lot more fish.
Okay. Now, one of my favorite things to do is out there in the Gulf trolling. I like trolling in the Atlantic, the Gulf, the Pacific. Give me a place where I can go trolling. I'm all about it. Now, I use a staggered out method. I start with my deepest one in the back right rod holder. I want to get it down. I use the back holder because one time I made a turn. I had it in the forward holder. Caught my line. It was a real nightmare getting the line out of the prop, everything else. So I start the very back rod holder on the right with my deepest lure. Now, I like putting something that's going to go down 30 feet. I'm not big on the 40-footers, but I'll use them. But I start usually with a 30. And in the one to the on the left side, I'll put about a 20-foot diver. So I get a 30-foot diver on the right, 20-foot diver on the left. And I let that one go back behind the boat a little bit. I like those because I don't catch a lot of fish with them, but I catch more in my other stuff, I think, because they're there getting the attention. They do such a big vibration, big noise in the water that I think I use them kind of as teasers for my smaller baits up. Now, let's say you're going with that. What would you want to put above those to, I like, I go to my forward right, and I usually want something that goes 2 to 3 feet under the water, or maybe even a couple of skirted ones. That's how I set my stuff up, all at different lengths, going shallower. As the shallower the lure gets, the longer the line on that one is. And what do you got for as far as skirted lures? I like the Williamson, the CNH. Those are my two favorite brands, with I think Billy Bait probably being. Billy Baits have an amazing thing. They're made with dissimilar metals. They create a magnetic charge in the water,
electrolysis.
Electrolysis charge in the water as you drag them through. And that's what made Billy Baits so popular all these years and why they outfish so many of the other ones, is that dissimilar metal thing going on literally gets a kind of a magnetic or electric field in the water.
Fish pick up on that.
And the fish pick up on it, and then they pick up the lure. So I'm big on I like the purple and black. Yeah, purple and black Billy Bait is one of my favorites. Do you have a favorite for trolling?
Well, I have a bunch of favorites because so many of them work. I really like the CNH lures. Williamson makes some really good lures, too, and we use Williamson quite often. We're fishing a dredge, which is basically a deep teaser. And the dredge will be back in the position where you're talking about your deep bait is going. It'll be 20 feet under the boat, and it'll be back behind the transom. So what we literally do is we have a naked, chin-weighted swimming ballyhoo that we put directly over the dredge.
Are you starting to see a pattern with him and his fishing?
There's a lot of nudity in this fishing.
A lot of nudity on this. I'm like, okay. So anyway, go back to the naked. What was that?
It's a chin-weighted ballyhoo.
Sorry, my mind just goes left, right. You know,
and it's
certain keywords.
And by naked, we mean there's no skirt on it. It's just a plain ballyhoo with a chin weight. And it could be an ounce, three-quarter ounce weight. We want it to go deep, and it goes down there just in the area that the dredge is at. And you've got some crazy vibration because there are probably 15 or 20 lures on this dredge, and they're swimming their shad tails and, you know, skirts and flash teasers and things like that, and it makes a big commotion. It's creating the illusion of a school of bait fish.
Now, we used to have a spot for them, and we haven't had room for them because they're not big, strong sellers, but a normal name is umbrella rig for them. People used to call them umbrella rigs all the time, but we're going to have the umbrella rigs. Morris and I are going through my catalogs, looking through the different companies, and Morris is going to help me stock our new offshore section at Fish and Frank's. We've got room we've never had before, so with this extra room, we're setting up a blue water, deep water section that you're going to be able to come in and find anything you want for bottom fishing, trolling. If you're going out into blue water, it's going to be in that section. And so it's one of the reasons we were excited about getting all this new space. We've rented the unit next to us. We're dealing with all that, trying to make everything work. But we're getting there. And it's, you know, you can't do what you want to do. You got to go with what's existing and how it already is. So it makes things a lot more challenging. But right now we're stripping the floors up, getting everything clean, making sure everything's going to be nice for everybody. Keel, are you much of an offshore guy?
Not really.
Okay. Robert, you like being offshore? I mean, I know you like being offshore.
Sure.
Keel. I just didn't know. You know,
I'm a fair weather fisherman. You know, if the weather's nice, absolutely, I dig it. But because I get seasick, it has. I got to be really picky. But I really
that's the way I am. I got a flat bottom boat. I better be able to water ski out there before I'm going out there.
The knowledge I've gained from Morris over the years and some of the stuff I've gotten to see out there offshore, it is pretty amazing. And you don't realize the amount of life that really is out there because everyone in this area has straight ahead itis. They're going snapper fishing or grouper fishing, and that is it. And with the exception of the near shore guys in the spring and fall that are looking for the king mackerel and Spanish mackerel, but they never go outside of that box past like 25 or even 20 miles, really, and think about the aspect of trolling for pelagic fish.
And what's funny, if they were in the Keys, they'd easily go out 30, 40 miles looking for mahi
in
the exact
boat.
Same boat. Exactly the same thing. And but
you see them
in
kayaks,
so they don't want to
there.
Do it.
I see those guys in jet skis out there, you know, 28 miles out at the Isle Morada humps, and it's like
I would feel safer in a jet ski than most of those boats.
Well, that's
pretty
true.
Hard to sink a jet ski,
right? So. But still crazy.
RJ, you big offshore guy?
In my younger days, I used to love it, but as I've aged, I've gotten like Robert, where it just I can't handle it. It doesn't matter how much Jameson I drink, I still get sick. So,
for all you people out there, a lot of different remedies. My favorite for going out in the Gulf, because I had Meniere's disease, thing wrong with my inner ears, I use Sudafed. Just non-drowsy, original Sudafed. Not the stuff you can get out on the floor. The stuff you got to go back to the pharmacist and get from the pharmacist. Once your earways are clear, your sinuses are clear, very small chance you're going to get seasick. And if you're going out in the boat and you don't always get seasick, but every once in a while, always make sure you keep that with you. It is the only medication you can take while you're on the water and actually expect to get any better. Everything else is just, most of that stuff, if you don't like Dramamine and all that, you got to start taking it the day before. And basically what it does is make you sleepy and a little dopey. And I don't like that kind of stuff because I'm dopey enough. I want to be alert. I want to be having fun. I don't want to be medicated. Robert's got, you got what, wristbands and ear patches and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I generally get the ear patch, but the wristband with a little bit of electricity that goes through it that you can change the charge on, it works pretty well. There is this one little... it's a liquid vial that's called Motion Ease, and you actually wipe that behind your ear and it absorbs into the skin, and it's more of a natural type remedy. But also ginger is a phenomenal
my wife does well with ginger.
Yeah, and you taught me that, and it's helped significantly. You know, something as simple as eating ginger snap cookies, ginger ale, and just buying the regular ginger vitamins helps.
The best thing that I have ever used is flats fishing.
Yeah, stay off the golf.
I'll go with Keel on that one.
Sometimes the best thing is you just can't do it. But we give you a lot of different stuff for the fishing, Frank, here. We have a store on US 41 in Edgewater in Port Charlotte. We have another store in Fort Myers at the Ingman Marine Boat Dealership. We've probably got other stores that I'm not even actually aware of. I got Robert, the blind tarpon in the chair across from me. We got Captain Morris Campbell, and he is, if you want to go bass fishing, Morris is a freshwater charter boat captain who catches like 10-pounders regularly. We have Captain Keel in the seat next to me. He takes people out fishing in his boat, or he goes out with other people in their boat and shows them where to go and what to do and all the rest of that good stuff. And RJ in the crew and troll booth, and I guess it's time to get out of here, boys and girls. See you on the next one, or listen to you on the next one. No, you'll be listening to me. I can't hear you. Fish, 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 fish. I'm going fishing.